Welcome to the Round 14, Your Supercoach Coach Podcast. I'm Marcus, and I'm joined this week by Mark, or FB Donkey.
G'day, everyone.
And Faz.
Hey, guys.
We'll start off, of course, as usual, by telling you guys how we went on the weekend. I didn't actually score very well. I had Bartel's 4 and Chris Knights's 20. I only finished with a score of 2066, which meant I fell about 200 spots. So I'm sitting outside the 500 now, and it's looking unlikely that I'll be able to catch up to the leaders, having slipped over the last 2 weeks. But I'm still hopeful because there's lots of carnage so far this season, and I expect even more when players start getting rested. So keeping my fingers crossed. Mark, how did you go?
Well, I finally beat you for the first time in a few weeks, Marcus, but I didn't have Bartel and I didn't have Knights, and I still only scored 2081. Buddy captain didn't work out so well, but I think you had the same captain, is that right?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, it didn't work out as expected at all. He only had 2 good quarters, but I'm really not sure what happened to my team. It just managed to, it looked good on paper, no really bad scores, but except for Rewald, and just didn't get up there this week. I've dropped outside the top 3,000 to about 3,500, but my team still looks all right, so I'm hoping for a late season rush.
Yeah, and I'm back in my regular spot of 3rd out of 3. Scored 2038 on the weekend. Also had Jimmy Bartel's 4 and Rewalt's 32, but I think most teams would have had that as well. It seems like all three of us went the same captain. I had Buddy, so that was a bit disappointing. I was actually feeling pretty good about the week. On Friday night, I'd had Graham Johncock's 117 and Higgins' 126, which are both sort of fairly unique picks. But yeah, just continued to get worse as the weekend went on. Yeah, I guess the one saving grace for my team was that I made the right decision. I had a call to make between Isaac Smith, Max Bailey and Tendai Mazungu of who to play on field, and went for Isaac Smith. So that's a couple of points I got in the bag there.
Nice one, Faz. That would have been a bit risky because there would have been some chance that Smith would have been the sub. So who did you bring in for Monday last week, Faz?
I ended up going Boyd. So I've brought my kiss of death onto Boyd. So sorry to all the Boyd owners out there. Was considering Luke Hodge, but Poe talked me out of that. Didn't want me to put the kiss of death on someone that's in his team. Didn't score all that well on the weekend, but hopefully things turn around for him.
Yeah.
Well, I've got Boyd as well a couple weeks ago, Faz, and he scored 70 first week in my team, but then 160 the week after. So hopefully he does it again this week. I brought in Ablett and Pritis for Selwood and Mundy last week, and not a bad start from them too.
We'll start off this week's show by covering a few players that a lot of people picked at the start of the season and now are probably considering whether they're worth playing, whether they're good enough to play on field for the rest of the season, as you know, people are getting hit pretty hard by injuries and suspension and the like. So we're going to kick it off with a rookie who started really well and was looking like a bona fide keeper, but has since dropped off a bit, as to be expected with rookies. And I guess that explains a few of the guys that we're going to cover. But Dyson Heppel, 337,000 at the moment. He started the season before his bye in round 10. I think he was averaging above 90. But since the bye, Essendon have struggled and Heppel has struggled as well. So he's only posted 79, 49 and 60. Now we've got two Essendon fans here, so I'll let them have their take on it.
I'll let you go first, Faz. I'm really interested to hear your thoughts here.
Yeah, well, I was absolutely rapt that he slipped so far down the draft. And from what I saw of him early in the year, he looks like he's going to be an absolute star over his whole career. But I'd say probably just fatigue is the main thing that's affecting Heppel. His possession count seems to have dropped off a bit. I guess that's probably just a sort of a result of him not being able to work as hard around the field. He's quite a good runner and gets into the good spaces to win the ball, which he hasn't seemed to have been doing as much in recent weeks. Also, I guess the form of Essendon has dropped off quite a bit. As we saw in the sort of 2 weeks ago against Fremantle, the 49 came when Essendon put in an absolutely insipid performance. It was really only the last quarter that saved the scoreline a bit. But I'd say mainly just fatigue is what I think it is. What are your thoughts, Mark?
Yeah, I think you're probably right there, mate. Maybe they're putting a bit more work into him, but probably running off halfback, he's probably running free a lot. And he was getting up to 25 possessions in the middle of the year. And I think we should probably expect these rookies to be reasonably inconsistent. It's the first year of AFL, and even the real stars are saying that this year is probably more draining than previous seasons, that they're carrying more injuries and they're more fatigued during games. So I think there's a reasonable expectation that they will drop off a little bit. I'm sort of wondering whether this week is the week to get off Heppel if you can afford it, just because he's still at a really good price, but if he keeps pumping out 60s for the rest of the year, then he's not really going to be worth keeping on the field. And people might have other mature age rookies like Lower or Dygan or Stanley that could take his place and maybe have better second halves of the year.
Yeah, well, he did drop 25,000 last weekend, and his break-even is 126. Yeah, well, I probably Mark brings up a really good point that the season's just so much tougher than it's ever been before, and we should probably be expecting that most of these guys will probably drop off. And I think we're also seeing that with a rookie that we're going to cover in a bit in Darling. So we're going to cover a few of the options, solid options in the back line, particularly a couple of good SOS in a bit. But I think that's enough on Heppel, so we'll move on to talking about Jack Darling, who's at 281,000, break even of 102, and after averaging, I think he was about 80 to 90 for the first 9 rounds. The last 4 rounds have seen him deliver 47, 75, 42, and 53. And I think there's talk that this week he might not play.
Yeah, Clarkey from the Herald Sun has said that he expects Darling to play in the waffle this week and might actually have a spell there of a few games. But then again, there is talk that West Coast really need to get a scalp. Carlton could be that scalp. Carlton probably don't have enough tall defenders, so they could try and expose them there. So he might be able to survive for one more game, and then they've got the bye. But his scoring definitely does seem to have dropped off a little bit, and now probably is a pretty good time to be getting rid of him if you can afford to do that.
The next player we're going to look at is Andrew Cracker. Now, he's obviously a slightly different story. 338,000. He's pretty much maintained his scoring throughout the season, average of 79, and the last few weeks has seen him average 80. So he's still doing well, and of course, Collingwood are bye for you for the rest of the year. So how do you guys feel about Cracker as a pick, and do you think he has much greater scoring potential than he's shown so far in the season?
Yeah, well, I actually jumped off Cracker fairly early in the piece this season, but I'm starting to wish I'd sort of kept him for a bit longer. And it's mainly just for his MPP. That swing between the forward line and the midfield would just be pretty handy if you can afford to keep Cracker as the sort of your number one bench option in either of those two spots on the ground. I think that could help your team quite a bit. We're seeing this week sort of Buddy and Rewalt both going to be missing. It'd be pretty handy to be able to be covering that absence with Cracker rather than some of the other lower scoring rookies that people might have on field.
That's exactly the setup I've got in my team, Faz, where I've got Cracker and Mzungu sort of swinging between those mid and bench forward spots. I think it's going to be tough every week with Mzungu playing fairly well to actually pick out of the two which one goes onto the field. But I think I'd take Cracker. His AFL experience, the fact he plays for the Premiers, is a good thing. I think Brad Dick going down with a knee has just been massive for Cracker's job security. I think he's best 22 for Collingwood, no doubt whatsoever at the moment. The fact that he can chime in for goals pretty well, I think his spot's pretty secure there. There he's bye free, like you say. I think there's a pretty good chance he'll come on as the sub at some point again, or come off as a sub like he did earlier in the year. I think most Collingwood players will be rested in some way for the in the remainder of the season, but Cracker looks pretty good for a solid 80 average, and a team that's going to win every week. I'm pretty happy keeping Cracker on my bench at the moment.
Yeah. Well, I think the best move this year, particularly in the forward line, was to, you know, for the players like for a player like Cracker to actually, you know, if you held on to him throughout, that it actually was the right move, because, you know, as we found out, that we ended up having a lot of rookies that we could cash in on, and a lot of people didn't actually need to use Cracker as a cash cow, but did anyway, and that, you know, at 350,000 is still a solid scoring option when players like Darling are starting to taper off. That, you know, Cracker, And, you know, we're going to look at a few options in the forward line a bit later on, but you'll be able to straight swap him at the moment for, you know, a player like Jonathan Brown, who, you know, if you want to take a punt on, you know, him increasing his average for the rest of the season or whatever, that's actually turned out to be the optimal move with Cracker, but a lot of people didn't actually follow through with keeping him. So the last guy we're going to look at is Tendai Mazungu, who most of us brought in pretty recently. He scored 77, 64, 85, and 92 in his four games, not as the sub. Mark, you wanted to talk about his scoring potential.
Yeah, I was just wondering whether a couple of people have asked whether you could actually keep him on the field as your seventh forward or even your sixth midfielder, but and whether his scoring potential is going to be enough for that. And I think we've actually seen that him developing fitness in the preseason, he looked like he could average 100, and that doesn't seem totally out of the realms of possibility. He could average in the 90s or the 100s. We need to see him put in a really big game if he's going to average 100. But I think that he probably has the potential in a normal year where you could have him at F7 for the rest of the year. But given the fact that there's buys this year and that your first reserve is going to be playing so often, I think you should really be looking to try and get Mazungu into that first bench spot so that you really can use MPP to its full value, and you can also, he's going to play most weeks anyway.
I think one thing to note with Mazungu and with a lot of with all Fremantle players is, and I think I brought it up last week, they have Brisbane and Gold Coast the next two games, but after their bye, they do have a pretty stiff run of opposition, so that's just one extra thing to keep in mind. So, Mark, do you want to have a summation of the four guys we talked about and whether you reckon that to keep or trade guys like Heppel or Darling?
Sure. I think that personally, I'm just slightly leaning towards keeping a player like Lower over Heppel at the moment. It depends whether you can afford to actually put one of them on the bench. That would be probably the best situation. But I do see Heppel dropping off a little bit. I think this week is the week to get off Darling. It's a bit more clear-cut there where it really looks like he's going to need to get a rest. But he should come back before the finals, hopefully fitter from West Coast perspective. Cracker seems like a definite keep to me. Mazungu, keeping, but on the bench, it's going to be much better off for your team.
All right, awesome. So we're going to travel to the back line now and look at a couple of premium options. The first one we want to talk about is Graham Johncock. We've mentioned him a few times now, but just looking at the options that we have left that, you know, don't present extra buy clashes due to existing popular players, that Johncock's one of the few remaining options, and he actually looks to be a pretty good option. In fact, with Adelaide having favourable opposition in terms of their defensive players, and Graham Johncock is one of the least defensive players I've ever seen play in the back line, and he's a great creative runner from the back line, so I think he'll benefit greatly from his remaining SOS. Faz, do you want to give him a spruik?
Yeah, well, I guess just firstly touching on his bye, it could cause a bit of problems that Adelaide share their second bye in round 16 with Fremantle and Melbourne. So I guess anyone that brought in Strauss last week, I know Lower's still quite popular in a lot of teams, and Broughton's also pretty popular backline premium. So that's something I guess worth keeping in mind. As you said, the defensive side of his game is pretty woeful. The last 2 weeks we've seen opposition coaches exploit that. He had Lacroix against West Coast, who kicked quite a few goals. Gian kicked about four, I think, on him last week, last Friday night. So I guess that doesn't really hurt his Supercoach scoring, but I'm just surprised that there's been no sort of pressure on his spot in the team or anything like that. I think we were having this discussion when watching the game on Friday night, that if we were Adelaide supporters, we'd be sort of screaming at Neil Craig to drop him back to the twos, just because it hurts so much when you've got one of your back six that doesn't actually defend at all. But I guess his big strength is where he wins a lot of his possessions, and that's sort of deep in the back line, which means that he's the one that's providing a lot of those rebound 50s. So he can sort of not have a whole lot of touches. He only had 20 against Bulldogs, 26 against West Coast, and 25 against North the week before. But those three games have returned scores of 124, 131, and 117, which are pretty impressive numbers. Mark, have you got any thoughts on Johncock?
I just think he's probably fully priced, and you would have wanted to get him on him at about 400 or less. Has a potential to be a really high scoring defender, but you'd really think that they'd need to keep using the same statistic where, or same approach where they're trying to exploit him with people like Lacroix or Gia. And I'm not certain that that's going to happen. And I think there are going to be games where he's going to be tagged and get pretty low scores again. Which brings us to our next player, who actually has been tagged a little bit lately, and that is Heath Shaw, who had a ripping start to the year, really consistent. Got subbed early and got 81, but other than that, just hundreds for the first eight games. But then two out of the last four, he scored in the 60s, with 67 against Adelaide and 60 against Melbourne, where they did keep a fairly strong tag on him through the game. He's someone that's definitely on my radar, considering he's got a high average, no more buys, 430,000. I mentioned in an earlier podcast that you want to be picking up these defenders when they're on their downswing, not when they're on their upswing. So Fisher's a good example where he's already probably fully priced, so it's a bit hard to pick him up at his current price because a good chance he'll have a down game, although he might be an exception. So yeah, I'm big raps for Heath Shaw this week.
Especially a buy-free Heath Shaw, you'd think you'd have to pick him up if you were looking for an option back there. And just with their SOS as well, they got Gold Coast, Essendon, Port Adelaide, St Kilda, and Geelong, who this season have been pretty good to defenders in terms of opposition scoring. So just keep that in mind. So onto the midfield now, where Jimmy Bartel is in doubt this weekend, and of course, a few people might also be MPPing Goddard to sit on their bench there. But we're going to look at a couple options. The first one is a pretty captain obvious pick here, but Scott Pendlebury. I don't think we talked as much about him last week just because he was on the bye, but we did flag him, and he is coming off his bye, and he is the highest averaging Supercoach player in the AFL at the moment. So obviously, get on him this week if you're looking, you know, if you're looking to do a midfield upgrade or your last midfield upgrade. And I'm certainly bringing him in this week.
Yeah, what's he priced at, Marcus? About 550?
Yeah, he's very dear, but more than worthwhile, I think.
So it seems pretty fully priced, but coming off a huge run of games, no more buys. If you can't afford it, he would be the pick this week. What about him versus Ablett? Who would you take? They're both buy free.
Pendlebury, yeah. I'm still, especially at this at my current stage, and I think it's, you know, it might be a good time to have this discussion, I guess, that I think we have in the elites forum a guy called Bandit who's been good enough to come up with a program to help us look at the stats ownership statistics, and I think FFC have done that in the past, but I think 71 or 72% of the top 1,000 have Ablett. So at this stage, I'm probably just going to take or back my initial call on Ablett and hope that he does taper off. I mean, he has had a brilliant run of games, but it has been, you know, the four games. So yeah, I'm just gonna back myself there and go with Pendlebury, who I feel is a certainty for a 125 average.
Did you happen to get Pendlebury's stats there as well, though? Because I'd say he's probably another one that's a pretty popular pick amongst the top
I think
1,000.
you're right there, Faz. I think he has like probably even more popularity than Ablett, to be honest.
Yeah,
In the top one.
he does. Except, like, I would back Pendlebury to play out the year over Ablett. I would back Pendlebury to average 125 over Ablett, I guess. Well, at this stage, I'm thinking that that's a like one of the punts I can take, you know, going for the win, is that I'd back that Ablett doesn't go well, because I don't think Pendlebury is going to slip playing for Collingwood and number one side in the comp.
I think Pendlebury's a fair chance to miss a game being rested at some point, but Ablett probably does seem a bit more likely to miss games. And they're both absolute guns, and I guess if you're choosing between guns, it can't hurt to pick the gun from the team that's on top of the ladder rather than the team that's down near the bottom.
Yeah, well, at this stage, it's pretty dicey with Ablett. I think it's probably pretty obvious with, you know, my thought process that I just ran through there, that it is pretty dicey. But at this stage, I think I'm more comfortable to back Pendlebury from Collingwood than Ablett. So I'm hoping that'll be a, you know, a positive point of difference that I don't have in the future. But certainly, it's hurting
Yeah.
me at the moment. You know,
I was
anyway.
hoping that Hodgie dominates.
Yeah, yeah. You know, got to live with, you know, the decisions you make. You know, going wishy-washy and, like, back and forth and jumping on a player that, you know, I passed on when he was 80K cheaper before he delivered these scores, then to jump on after that doesn't seem like the right move. So I'm just going to back myself. Anyway, next player we're going to talk about is Job Watson, who, like Essendon, seems to have tapered off a bit. And, of course, he was affected by the injury. He did miss weeks with that. So, again, going to throw to the Essendon boys. Job Watson, what do you reckon as a pick? He's 454,000 at the moment and set to drop with a break-even of 157.
Yeah, well, he didn't look all that flash on the weekend, I didn't think, coming off a pretty poor return game against Freo the week before. I was pretty surprised to see, actually, that he was leading the possessions for most of the game, finishing with 29. But the ones he did get, he didn't seem to be using the ball all that well, which I guess is a return to the Job Watson of former years. That was something that most people in football were commenting on this year, is that his kicking has definitely improved. So my hope is that that's just sort of a thing that he's going to get his touch back after a few weeks. I don't know that he'd be a great pick right now just with a break-even of 157. You can probably wait a week or two on that, and he should be sort of low 400s pretty soon, I'd say.
I was a bit surprised by his possession count as well. Faz were both in the game, and I just didn't notice that he got the ball that much. But I think he did have a couple of shots at goal like every other Essendon player that he missed. I do remember one of his passes, he marked at about 45 and just speared the ball across to Melksham. It was a beautiful kick off one step. But, yeah, I was a bit disappointed to see he only got 96. I think that in 2 weeks' time, he's going to be a really good pick. Essendon do have a tough strength of schedule, but Watson normally only misses games through one injury per year, and hopefully he's already done that and can build a bit of fitness and a bit of form coming into the next month or two.
Yeah,
and I guess just a final thing I'd mention would be obviously teams that are going for the league win should steer clear of Watson with him having his second bye in round 24. So that's Supercoach grand final time. You don't want to have to be making a trade with a premium midfielder then.
Yep, and I just want to mention that point of tough SOS that Mark just talked about. They have Hawthorn and Geelong the next 2 weeks. They also have Carlton and Collingwood and Sydney and West Coast. So they do have some tough teams. But if you pick him up after the Hawthorn Geelong run, then he actually has a reasonable SOS. So probably target him after the Geelong game. Now, we're going to just mention Aaron Sandilands is about a 50-50 to play this week. I'm not sure that probably affects too much decisions. Most people just hopefully gets back as soon as possible, and others that he stays out for as long as possible. But sorry, Ma.
Have you guys still got him?
Yes, I do.
No, I actually pulled the trigger the week he went down, traded him down to Joel Tippett so I could open up that MPP link with Petrie, and I think that's served me pretty well, especially with what I was able to do with the cash. I turned Jared Irons into Matthew Pritis, so very happy with that move.
Nice, and I pulled the trigger as well and got rid of him. I think from the discussions that I've had with people that have still got him, they think he'll play this week. People that don't have him think that he won't play until after his bye. So the information's pretty unclear at the moment. I think Frio's side had him as a test for this week. It was a report in the paper that he is running, but he was probably 50-50. And on the Herald Sun, they had him as 1 to 2 weeks still. So still very unclear whether he'll play this week. My gut feeling says that there's a fair chance he'll miss.
Yeah, well, they go to Brisbane this week and Gold Coast next week. I know Mitch Clark has gone down with an ankle injury, so that's one less ruckman for Brisbane. And I guess Zach Smith's had quite an impressive debut season, but still by no means you'd consider it the best rucking division in the league. So I'd say Freo could be fairly confident in holding off on bringing him back in if that's what they need to do.
Yeah. But they're also in pretty woeful form, and it would not be good to play against Brisbane. I don't know. It seems like a complete flip of the coin, but we just wanted to flag that. And another player that might be missing from Fremantle on the weekend is actually skipper Matthew Pavlich, and he's in a massive amount of teams. And with Nick Riewoldt out this week as well and Lance Franklin suspended, And Cam Richardson still might not be getting games despite another strong showing in the VFL this weekend, that some donuts might be coming people's way.
Yeah, I've got two of those guys. I got Rewalt, Franklin, and Richardson, obviously. So I don't have Pavlich. So kind of almost hoping that he's out for. But he's owned by about 90% of the top 1,000 teams. So very, very popular pick. And I think he's got an ankle injury, and that he'll probably be named, and he'll be given till Saturday afternoon to see if he can play. I think Fremantle really don't know at this stage. They're just hoping.
Yeah. Would you think about, if you had the trades, would you think about trading Pavlich out? Because if he does miss this week, then he does have Gold Coast next week, but then you hit their bye and then their tough run of games.
Yeah, it's a pretty tough question there, Marcus. Personally, I don't have him, so I don't have to think about it. I think you'd have to keep Pavlich at this stage and then reassess later on and just cop the donut in the short term. I don't think you can afford to trade someone that might miss 1 week, might miss 2 weeks maximum sort of thing. And Pavlich is a gun. So I know that there are people out there that think that he, once he's picked up an injury, he'll probably play with it and have to carry it for the rest of the year. And I think there's a fair bit of truth in that. So you might see his scoring drop off a little bit, but it'd be a pretty rare situation where you could actually trade him out. I think that a player that you might actually consider trading out more is Nick Rewalt, who his form has just turned to crap and hasn't really done much this year at all. And I'm noticing in some of the leagues that I'm playing in, there's quite a few teams that don't have him anymore and have already pulled the trigger. Would any of you consider trading Rewalt out?
Yeah, well, that was actually the one thing that I probably wanted to talk about most. We are talking about this, you know, after a pretty woeful game against Geelong, who, you know, do boast Scarlett, you know, playing a loose rebounding defender role, and that doesn't happen every week. He did score 86-101 the 2 weeks before that. I don't think he's someone you have to pull the trigger on, especially seeing as he has dropped a lot in price already. He's at 375,000, so the options around there aren't that much better, I don't think. But look, if he continues to struggle and you pull a trade trigger now, he could be, not having him could be a significant point of difference, because a lot of, you know, where you get the biggest gains over the competition is, you know, being decisive about people who have fallen out of form. But, you know, that often is the hardest thing to do in Supercoach. I'm not too sure. I'm wanting to trade him out, but I'm only wanting to trade him out for somebody who is buy-free for the rest of the year. And I guess that's the biggest issue at the moment. They're only Collingwood players, and I'm not too hot on the Collingwood forwards. But once more teams get their second buy either way, I think I'll be looking to move Nick Rewalt on, especially, you know, after he's cleared the Gold Coast game.
He's only broken 100 three times this year.
Yeah, well, they've got North Melbourne, Port, West Coast, Adelaide, Gold Coast, which should be a good run for Nick Rewalt. It should.
It doesn't seem like he's injured. Like, I haven't heard anything about him being injured. It just seems like he's just down on form.
Yeah.
Or struggling with his role, and St Kilda are down. And
yeah, I think those off-field issues that we all know about are probably playing quite a bit on his mind. And although Kaczynski gets quite a bit of crap about not being much of a player, I think even though he did play on the weekend, he's obviously not at his best. And just when teams are able to be so conscious of Rewalt and sort of double team him every time the ball's coming in, that's obviously going to make things a lot more difficult. As I said, Kaczynski's not much of a footballer in my opinion, but he does at least require sort of one of your top line defenders to stay on him the whole game.
Yeah. Well, I think it's just really important to keep in mind that he was playing against Geelong, and he does struggle significantly against our back line. And yeah, he's only really, he's had four scores below 80. So yeah, considering how badly St Kilda have been playing, he's not actually been that bad. It just, it looks particularly bad when your, you know, captain full forward gun is running to the back line to get his hands on the pill. And that's probably triggering it more than anything. I think if you're able to trade him out after the Gold Coast round, that's pretty good, but I'd probably look to keep him over the next, you know, 5 to 6.
Anyway, yeah, I agree with that.
Right. Now, the next player we're going to look at is a bit more of a smoky, but he's been performing really well since moving to the midfield. That's Mark Lecraft from West Coast. He's currently priced at $438,000, break-even of 81. His last few games have returned scores of 113, 113, 43, 144, 119, and 106. So that's absolutely brilliant because I believe he was priced at about 300 or 350K for a few weeks there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, Hawke has been predicting this one for a few years, a couple of years, or especially at the start of last year, and it just sort of hasn't come off yet, but just been absolutely dominating recently, Lecraft, and probably with West Coast forward line functioning a bit better, he's been able to spend a little bit more time in the midfield and been kicking goals, and he seems reasonably fully priced at the moment. But if he stays on the field and can stay fit, he should average pretty well from here on in.
Yeah, I know lots of people were sort of looking forward to Lecraft making a move into the midfield for quite a few years now, as you mentioned, Mark. But I think sort of it was more the weakness in their forward line than anything wrong with Lecraft that kept him playing forward. And I guess sort of adding Darling to the mix with Cusick and now Dean Cox is able to spend quite a bit of time down forward with Nat Nui playing so well in the ruck, that's it's allowed him to drift up into midfield, which obviously just means more possessions. And a player of Lecraft's quality, I think he's going to score well anytime he's getting his hands on the pill that often. I guess I'm a little worried. He's that poor score in those run of games you mentioned there, Marcus, was a 43 against Collingwood. And his next 3 weeks have Carlton, Bye, and Geelong. So that's third and first on the ladder along with a bye, so could be a couple of poor games in there if that was a trend, that Collingwood game.
Yeah, I think the right time to bring in Lecraft would obviously be after his bye or after Geelong game or after the game after that to have an extra week for his price to fall. But his last few rounds do look really good, and he is a player that we should emphasize is particularly good for league teams because he's got Bulldogs, Richmond in the lead up to Supercoach finals, but the last four rounds, which are Supercoach finals, he's got Melbourne, Essendon, Brisbane, and Adelaide. So if you're wanting a smoky, if you're wanting a good player that you can bring in to perform in your league finals, then Mark Lecraft certainly looks the goods. And another player that also has a really good SOS in the finals period of Supercoach is Colin Sylvia, who also happens to just have bottomed out this weekend. His break-even is 72, the 32 in round 11 that he scored, being subbed off from a corky, just cycled out of his price cycle. So he's at 399,000, of course, mid-forward MPP, and their last four games are West Coast, Richmond, Gold Coast, and Port Adelaide. But do remember their round 16 bye, which they do share with Fremantle and Adelaide. But of course, if you're going for the league win, then that'll be a bonus for you.
Yeah, I think I say this every time that Sylvia comes up on the show, but I don't particularly rate him as a footballer just because the defensive side of his game is so weak. You never really see him chasing down guys when the ball's coming out of Melbourne's forward line. And I guess that same could probably be said for quite a few of Melbourne's players. They don't seem to be very good at keeping the ball in their forward 50. But I guess I haven't, as I guess I'm not a fan of him, I don't keep track of him that closely. But looking at his game on the weekend where he was able to score the ton from only 18 possessions and a goal, that's pretty impressive stuff. I really like those players that have the ability to score highly off a limited amount of possessions, because that obviously means when they do manage to rack it up, sort of 25-plus disposals per game, and Sylvia's also quite good at pushing forward and kicking goals. He's got that ability to score some monster scores. You look back at round 7 against Adelaide, he scored 159, so a couple more of them, and it makes him quite a good pick running out the end of the season for you.
I think at 399, it's a really good price for him. His durability probably too much of a concern for me, and you might think that he's got a great last 4 weeks, but for my league team, I want to make sure that player is actually playing the last 4 weeks, and I'm not totally convinced Sylvia will be.
Yeah, it's a good point. Hasn't never played more than 18 games in a season, so that is quite a big concern.
I think, but it's also good to note, I think that it's been a trend in recent seasons that, particularly towards the end of the like the very last few rounds of the season, that poorer teams, like bottom eight teams, tend to do and therefore score better than some of the top eight teams due to, you know, player management and just generally not caring because the top eight is already set. So that is just something to note as well. The last guy we want to look at is Ian Callanan. Now, just bringing him up because he had 30 disposals in his second game back in the SANFL following his bicep injury. He's priced at 91.7K. He is a mid-forward MPP. And with Scott Stevens going down, Adelaide can afford to retain all three of their current elevated rookies and still elevate Ian Callanan. So that's good news for us, and I think we should be expecting to see him in the Adelaide outfit sometime soon, especially seeing as they're not traveling all too well.
Yeah,
I was wondering whether you could bring him in without him playing an AFL game.
Yeah, well, it certainly is an option. A big positive point is that, you know, he's currently, he's rookie price, so he is bottom price, which, you know, is an extra 20K, so that is a positive. And there are also not that many forward rookie options. Are there any on the bubble this weekend?
Sorry, go again. There's
Dalhouse from Bulldogs.
Yeah. Dalhouse. He looks all right. I guess my big worry with him would be just the form of Footscray's rookies this year. They've played a few, you know, guys like Mitch Wallace, Christian Howard, and Tom Libertroy has managed to keep his spot for most of the year. But I'd say, Wallace and Howard have both looked pretty good in the games they've played, and they've still been dropped back to the VFL, which I sort of can't really get my head around.
Yeah, well, the thing to note with Callanan was that, you know, he still wasn't guaranteed to break into the AFL side. You'd think he has a greater chance because Adelaide are also struggling and he is playing good football, but that is something to note. I think, Mark, in response to your question, I think the most appropriate a situation to bring Callanan in, having not yet played an AFL game, would be is that if you really can make that MPP work for you. So if he is the introduction of your MPP pivot and, you know, therefore frees up, enables you to dodge a donut, then I'd say go for it. But if not, you'd have to think that you wouldn't pick a guy who hasn't yet been named.
And if he does...
It's a really good point you make there, Marcus, where if you have someone like Wallace sitting at your ninth midfielder spot, not really doing anything, but you don't have any of the MPP players in your midfield, if you can open that up, just that in itself, whether the rookie plays or not, is a huge advantage.
Yeah, but for those that do have the MPP already set up, I'd say it's probably wise to stay off Callanan until he's on the bubble, just because if he does play this week against Geelong and the following week against Sydney, it then brings him to Adelaide's second bye of the season, which, as we've mentioned already, is a multi-bye round with Fremantle and Melbourne. So I guess that's some clashes there with Pavlich, Fife, Sylvia and Tapscott for anyone that's held on to him.
And I think that wraps up this week's show. So thanks very much for joining us again this week. Not as many hot topics as there was last week, but we hope you enjoyed it nonetheless. And best of luck in the upcoming round. There's going to be heaps more carnage. So, you know, keep positive about your team because anything can still happen.
Yeah, even though it hurts a lot of Supercoach teams, I'm glad Buddy's not going to be there to rip apart Essendon's backline this weekend. Go Bombers.
I caught you by 30 points this week, Marcus, and I'm on my way, mate. I'm coming, even though I'm like 1,000 points behind.
All right, cheers, guys. Thanks for the show.